Blog Talk Radio.
Refusal of King George III to allow the colonies to operate an honest money system which freed ordinary men from the clutches of the money manipulators was probably the prime cause of the American Revolution. That was Dr. Benjamin Franklin. Here's one from Thomas Jefferson. I believe that the banking institutions are more dangerous than standing armies. If people ever allow private banks to control the issue of currency, the banks and corporations that will grow up around them will deprive the people of their own property until their children wake up homeless on the continent that their fathers conquered. That was Thomas Jefferson. And so let us ask from a scientific perspective, what is an economy? What is economics? According to Webster's Dictionary, economics is a social science concerned chiefly with description and analysis of the production, distribution, and consumption of goods and services. So, okay, a social science. Does this science, or has this science, that is the economy, the one that we know today, the model that we know today, and there are different ones, has our current economy been subjected to the scientific method? This is a very important experiment, after all. It affects every living human being. The scientific method is as follows: hypothesis with theory, procedures, experiments is the second part. The third part is data and results. The fourth part is conclusions and findings. So under this test or method, does our current world provide efficiency? Is a scientifically good use of resources being applied? Are the needs of humans met? Physical, mental, emotional, spiritual? The human being is described as a biopsychosocial being. Many people out there think that the collection of things is an empowering mechanism. That's sort of the current model. Many or most humans have not even seriously asked why. Why is money so important? What is money? Where did money come from? Is money something inherent? Is it just natural? Are the needs and potentials met and actualized for biopsychosocial organisms? Are they actualized through a system of money exchange? I myself, me personally, have had a grown man tell me to my face that bad credit is a character flaw, and that I get what I deserve for not being a good person. This ridiculous statement aimed at your humble host is an example of the illusion of separateness. There is a myth that circulates in our culture that every man is some sort of island. There is a misinterpretation of individualism. What the founders of this country wanted was freedom for the individual. But even they knew that no one fights this alone. Let me refresh your memory, just in case you've forgotten. We the people, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, do ordain and establish the Constitution of the United States of America. So, the modern thinkers and commentators in the political world often forget that the founders did understand that we need each other in order to form a more perfect union. I'll quote Thomas Paine, the author of Common Sense, during that period. The world is my country, all mankind are my brethren. and to do good is my religion. Another quote by Thomas Paine is, we have within our powers to begin our world over and over again. So, why money? Is this the only thing we'll ever know as a form of economics? Is a social science and a economic structure based on gathering and collecting of numbers the best way to serve the needs and desires of a biopsychosocial being or beings? Will this model last? Well, currently humans are using Earth's resources at a rate of 44% faster than what the Earth can regenerate. Now, those numbers may vary from place to place. The consistent thing there is that we are using resources at a rate faster than can be regenerated. So, scientifically speaking, we must find or create, if that's necessary, if we can, a system which makes better use of our resources, or humans will suffer extreme consequences, potentially, eventually even become extinct. Now, the good news is we have more than enough resources on the Earth, if used intelligently, for every single human being to not only not starve, but to live a lavish and full life. So here is where it's a bit of good news. Not only to live a full life, but to pursue their passions. Currently, though, we've instead chosen to set our goals on personal wealth accumulation. Today we will discuss money. What is it? Is it real? Can we live without it? Today on Main Street Universe. That the mysteries and possibilities of the universe are closer to Main Street than you may have ever imagined. And our hostess, Janice, is not here today. She'll be back next week. But I see in the chat room we have our friend Kevin Baird, the person who I started this network with. And Kevin Baird can be reached at www.templeofgaia.com. His improved website that looks really nice. And there's all sorts of options and things to look up and activities there. And he's the creator of the Horizon Oracle Divination Deck. And there are card descriptions on the site. So if you wish to purchase a unique Oracle divination system, you can visit www.templeofgaia.com and purchase the On the Horizon Oracle deck, one that I've read with and I enjoy reading with, and we've done so on the air as well. Today we're talking about money, and I guess I should get a couple of things out there right away. People hearing my introduction are going, is this guy bashing money? Does he think it's evil? Are you a communist? And not really. None of those things are really true. First of all, I'm not in any way proposing communism. I don't think it's sustainable. I don't think it works. It's a centralization of and redistribution of resources. And it's pretty much been a failure every time it's been tried. What I am talking about is a non-political, scientific view of what money is, what morality have we placed on it, is it bad, is it good, and can we live without it? Will we eventually just have to at some point come up with something else? So mine is a scientific approach, not a political one, even though sometimes those lines can cross because all things are connected anyway. So we'll start right off. What is money? Money is a current medium of exchange in the form of coins and banknotes. That's how we know it today. Let us explore the history of money. This will be an exploration of the European model or the European lineage. I do realize there's other lineages. There's grain lending in Babylon, for example, India, China. But this is the closest history to our modern view on money and banking. At one point in history, humans were hunter-gatherers. As time went on, humans began to be more stationary and form villages and cities. With the trading of goods came a barter system. For a long time, these were just simple individual barter systems. Some used feathers, gems, stones, eggs. The list goes on and on. Grain, livestock. In some cases, these items represent a promise of a service or a future item. The barter system, though interesting and very personal without a large structure needed, did have some inconveniences, did have some issues. One was that some of the items, of course, to be bartered could be a bit cumbersome or difficult to deal with. An example would be a farmer needs a cow or desires a cow for his farm. So he says, I will take 3 pigs and travel around to trade 3 pigs for a cow, or whatever the exchange would be. So now the farmer must transport the 3 pigs for what might be a bit of a journey and to find a cow owner who's in the market for 3 pigs. So this lacked a certain efficiency, but on some small levels, it was still a very effective and just sort of personal system of trade that didn't need sort of oversight of some sort other than what the 2 people involved agreed upon. So then what happens? We stop, we form cities, and you know that the first known keeping of records, because they started record keeping, and written language was for the trading of beer. So the idea of wandering around now and then went from there, hunting-gathering, to barter system, to then some record keeping. going on, records of things being stored. And as more time passes, humans begin to place value on precious metals. Of course, the rarer the metal, the more valuable it seems to be. This takes us to a very interesting and important tradesman or artisan of the ancient world, and that is the goldsmith. The goldsmith makes things out of gold. Gold is fairly soft, easier to manipulate than some of the other metals. The goldsmith may as well have been an alchemist. So the goldsmith was a highly skilled, highly talented, interesting artisan who maybe even dabbled in metaphysical practices, magical practices. The goldsmith would make beautiful spiritual, ceremonial items for churches, as well as just plates and chalices, jewelry. Now, the goldsmith had something very valuable and important, even outside of the gold and jewels that he would work with, and that was he had a vault to keep his precious metals stored and safe. As time went on, the townspeople would come to this goldsmith where their valuable items, jewels, precious metals, and such were to be potentially stored. They would say, "Can I keep my precious items in your vault?" The goldsmith said, "Yes, sure, for a low interest deposit fee, sort of a rent." He was renting vault space. And so this relationship began. What then was developed is a few different incomes for our goldsmith. One was depositing fees, or the rent for depositing. Two, the making of gold items. The highly skilled artisan that he was, still making items for churches or whoever his customers were. And then the loaning of gold to others. So now he was basically the first bank, the sort of bank that we know, a bank as we know it. Yes, there is history of grain loans in Babylon, as I mentioned before, and money lending activity in China and ancient India. In fact, the goldsmiths of India were considered to be extremely talented artisans. But for today, we're following the European medieval goldsmith lineage to modern banking. As time went on, the goldsmith continued to lend more and more and began to understand an intriguing fact that almost no one comes in to claim all of their gold. So the goldsmith begins to lend gold through the use of lending notes written on paper. Claim checks, some people call them. The customer would enter, deposit money at a lower interest rate. Then another customer comes in and would borrow money at a higher interest rate. A pretty simple system, really. This is banking as our society knows it today. It gets better for the banker, the goldsmith. The goldsmith sees that merchants are trading almost exclusively in the paper money, the claim checks, the loan notes that he's been handing out. After all, gold is, it's very heavy, and paper is almost weightless, easily carried and easy to use. The goldsmith banker realizes that most people never even see what is in his gold vaults. They've been trading it so much, they've just started to trust the paper. So he starts printing paper loan notes that do not have any gold value attached to them or have a severely reduced one. As long as no one checks the vaults, and as long as new depositors keep coming in, and of course the loan's paid, this plan works. And the goldsmith banker becomes extremely wealthy. The goldsmith continues this way, lending money that had no gold to back it up, or very little gold to back it up. Some say it started with like a 10 to 1 ratio. And again, this scheme did work for a while. As time passes, borrowers did become suspicious. And banks were being asked to show and hand over gold represented in the paper notes, partially because they were looking so wealthy and lending such large amounts. People are saying, is there enough money there for this? They became suspicious. The investors did, the depositors did. So people called in their loans in mass numbers. It's called a run on the bank. And the money banks, many of them did collapse. One would have thought that this process of a private person creating a fake money would have been illegal. But nope, it was put into law. This is in England we're talking about. It was made legal and then regulated. And yes, you could basically say that fraud was made officially legal. It is legal, but it's still fake, but it's real because people believe in it. Central banks were then developed to sort of help bail out the little ones in the event of a bank run. So if people start to claim all their stuff all at once, there were central banks created to help bail them out, sort of a Band-Aid approach. Now, with this model, the failure of the bank could only happen if a whole lot of banks were run on all at once. So this really now is the true model for modern banking. Okay, let's look at the good and the bad. For a while, this system was extremely prosperous, and including even for common people. It just seemed to be like just a great way of doing business. And that'll take us to, let's leap in history here, towards the 1920s in the United States. I'm in America here. During the 1920s, it is said that it seems like everyone was making money in the stock market. What was being used as an economic tool then, called a margin loan. This margin loan worked as follows. A fairly common person could, we'll use modern numbers here. Say you go to lay down a deposit of $100, and in return you can borrow $1,000. It's a large amount to borrow on a small deposit. So you can walk in with 100, come out with 10 times more. Pretty good. I'm using simple numbers. But that's what the rate was. It was 10 times more. But here's the trick. This loan can be called in at any time, and you must pay it within 24 hours. So on October 1929th, the Rockefellers and some other barons quietly exited the market. And on the 24th, October 1929, the lenders called in their margin loans all at once, literally at the same time. Mass bank runs occur as a result. 16,000 banks collapse. The Great Depression begins. The international bankers take advantage of the low stock prices of corporations and bought them for pennies on the dollar. They also bought the collapsing banks at an extremely affordable rate. So basically, there were congressmen then calling this an engineered depression. One such congressman was Lewis McFadden. Mr. McFadden had been an opponent of these bankers for a while. And he began to bring up impeachment proceedings. He wanted to sort of abolish the Federal Reserve. Here's a quote from that congressman. It was a carefully contrived occurrence, the Great Depression he's referring to. International bankers sought to bring about a condition of despair so that they might emerge as the rulers of us all. Very big sort of conspiratorial-sounding language, from someone who was a member of Congress, and there were others that agreed with him. They really saw this as a very purposeful act to bring about the Great Depression. So, is it a proven fact? Many people say yes. Later on, that same congressman was poisoned. He was murdered for speaking of these things and for attempting to impeach the Federal Reserve. And then after that, in 1933, the bleakness goes on, and the government orders a gold seizure. So the government demanded that its citizens turn in all their gold during a depression or risk 10 years in jail. By then, the standard had been officially abolished. So this brings me to strange places politically. Though I'm attempting just to go over this scientifically, this is a place where both liberals and really conservative people kind of agree with some of this. When you start talking about gold standard and you start talking about the robber barons, you kind of, it's one of those funny places where the left and the right can sometimes see certain aspects that they agree with. So let's take us to another place. And then after this one, we'll try to pick it up and talk about positivity. But this will get into war. Start with World War One. The United States got involved with World War One after the sinking of the famous Lusitania ship from New York to Liverpool, England. In a documented conversation, Colonel Edward House and Foreign Secretary of Britain, Sir Edwin Grey. Here's how it goes. Grey says, "What will the Americans do if Germany sinks an ocean liner with American passengers on board?" Colonel House responds, "I believe a flame of indignation would sweep the United States. That by itself would be sufficient to carry us into war." And this is a documented conversation. Colonel House had very close ties with the large banking families that wanted to be in this war. Around the same time, another American politician sees this. He was the Secretary of State, William Jennings, and says the large banking interests were deeply interested in this world war because of the wide opportunities for large profits. After this, the Lusitania was attacked and sunk by German submarines, I believe it was. Then the U.S. enters World War One. We'll jump ahead to Vietnam. And I'll tie together what all this has to do with each other. Let's move to Vietnam. This war was one that became one of our true sort of modern war models. That is to say, it's one where certain people keep making money, but the war isn't really, it never was ever meant to be won. In the case of the Vietnam War, was an attack that was staged, just like with the Lusitania. However, unlike with the Lusitania, which is a real ship that sunk, the attack at the Gulf of Tonkin never actually happened. Now, this isn't conspiracy theory. This has been admitted by the people involved. Richard Nixon, Robert McNamara, this is just legal fact now, and it can be looked up. So, this event that drew the United States into the Vietnam War was an attack on a U.S. boat that never happened. And then, after propagating this lie, the U.S. gets involved in that war for many, many, many years. Later on, Nixon is talking about this lie on his Nixon tape, and so is Robert McNamara, who actually offered many apologies for these things later on in his life before he died. So, we've discussed history of money. We discussed how banks came to be, to exist. We discussed recessions and depressions. Are they engineered? Are they not accidents? Wars, are they engineered? Or in part engineered? We have as well discussed how private bank families make a lot of money during war and pay for both sides. So let us now step away from the past ugliness and look to the future. As I said in the intro, as of now, human beings do consume resources at a rate of 44%, faster than the Earth can replace them. Is this an effective use of resources? Of course, the answer is no. When put to scientific analysis, the current system will not continue to sustain us and is, in fact, highly destructive. Is there hope? Can we break this cycle? Are there things that people can do together to come up with another way of viewing what an economy is? And I'm not talking about any of the old isms, capitalism, socialism, communism. I'm not talking about any of that. I'm talking about a proper use of resources that exists outside of just personal collection of things. And I'll discuss some of those options when we return. Get to shortly some of the aspects bringing us out of the mucky mug, but let's observe some, depending who and where you are, the results of the current modern model of economics of money exchange. The worldwide use of the money medium kind of tells us that if you're not good at this numbers game, then you can't afford food. So, okay, you starve. If you're not good at the numbers game, you go to the dentist and you can't pay, so you suffer the pain of a toothache. Can't afford a doctor, you don't get treated. Of course, in America, there's a law that the doctor has to treat you in the case of emergencies. If they're life-threatening, I believe, is how the law works. If you can't afford water, you die of thirst. Of course, I'm talking worldwide here. And again, I ask the question, why are we so obsessed with the idea that people with money deserve things and that the rest of us do not, if they happen to be in whatever circumstance they're in? Some commentators will even say that rich people make our economy move. We owe them a debt of gratitude. I've heard people say only property owners should vote, as if to suggest that people that or families that don't own property have nothing to vote for or nothing at risk. Here's another illusion that I've heard people say. Common people, that is working common people, people that have jobs, their jobs are less stressful than upper class jobs because there's less on the line, there's less at stake. And this is just a scientific lie. Poor people's jobs come with the same or more stress because they live paycheck to paycheck and they feel powerless. So they're basically going somewhere where they feel like somebody's their dictator. And if they lose their little job, they lose their place, they're out in the cold. And this constant pressure makes whatever common job they have every bit or more as stressful than one that some upper class person has that thinks they have more on the line with their decision making. That's an illusion. So, you know, I have nothing against wealthy people. In fact, I'd like to be one. But I'm saying there are a lot of illusions out there. And there's a lot of funny ways of thinking that people have that they've just accepted as scientific, and it's not. So let's take a look at the media. Look at popular television. Now, I'm not overly romanticizing here, folks. But let me look at some of the popular television when I was a child and a teenager. I'm 41 years old now. Star Trek The Next Generation, which I just love. All in the Family was one I remember. And you could be either liberal or conservative and sort of get the humor in that show because both were represented. The Brady Bunch, MASH, In Search Of. Even the A-Team, it's corny, but, you know, it was kind of inspired effort of a team. The $6 Million Man, I remember. The X-Files later on. Let's start with my first example of Star Trek. Star Trek, The Next Generation. It was maybe my favorite television show ever. It asked amazingly deep philosophical questions while focusing on the triumphs of the human spirit. Innovation, open-mindedness and compassion. Exploring the mysteries of the universe as well as ourselves. And all the Star Trek kind of has that linked and in common. Shows like that show the power and beauty of the human soul, the ability to evolve and learn and live beyond, yes, the use of money. Star Trek, especially in Star Trek The Next Generation, commented quite a few times about how humans had evolved past needing to collect things and consider that to be important. They evolved past money. They might have traded personal items still on that show. I think I remember that happening a couple of times. But they evolved past putting all the importance on money. And one great scene, and I posted it on Facebook, was Captain Jean-Luc Picard, captain of the Enterprise, was discussing from people that had been frozen from the past and then had thawed out and survived. I think that's how it went. So this man from the past inquires about his money. He was a rich person from the past. And he wants to know, where's my money? Does it still exist? Here in the 24th century. And Captain Jean-Luc Picard replies, we are no longer obsessed with the accumulations of things, wealth. We have evolved out of our infancy. And the man says, my money, my office, it's gone. How will I live? And then the captain responds by saying, this is the 24th century. All of your needs are be provided for. So then the man softens up a little bit and says, so okay, so what then is the challenge? And the captain grins and says, the challenge is to better ourselves, enjoy it. So you see, throughout all human history, myth, fantasy, in this case, science fiction, have served as a source of inspiration for human invention and for human development. So many inventions and new ways of thinking have come from fantasy, myth, and especially science fiction. In our modern era, science fiction has inspired so many amazing inventions. and continues to do so. And once creation starts, it moves very quickly. It continues like a snowball effect. You invent something, and the mind just keeps working. Bam, 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 another invention, another one, another one, another one. We've invented so quickly in this last century as a testament to the triumph of the human ingenuity, intuition, and spirit. So we'll compare that. Compare some of what I just talked about and some of the ridiculous things that people believe, and they talk about like it's common knowledge. Like, oh, poor people's jobs aren't as stressful. They're just simple, and their decisions aren't as important as mine. All of it's just ridiculous. So, again, look at the things that we often find ourselves interested in. When I mentioned Star Trek, The Next Generation, that was a supremely popular show. It was so many people were watching this show, as well as a few others. I mean, now what the really popular shows are, even though there is some good stuff out there, I know there is, I'm just saying, but what has become the really popular stuff are things like the Law and Order shows, NCIS, Law and Order, blah, 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 blah. Go out and get some creep that lives in your neighborhood. Everyone's the same. None of them are any different. They got different characters. One has a really pretty goth girl that works in the forensics office. The only reason to watch it. But they have all these versions and variations, and it's always the system protecting you from your awful, horrible, creepy, weird, criminal neighbor. Whereas the shows that were super popular when I was a kid were about people doing amazing things. You know, boldly going where no one's gone before. Discovering the mysteries of the universe. And as well as the mysteries of the human being. And the triumph of the spirit. The same thing with MASH. Okay, so some people thought MASH, if they're conservative, are like it's too left-wing. Either way, it was a show that was inspiring, was about human condition, human triumph. Whether you liked it or not is not my point. My point is these were the popular shows. This is what Americans were watching. They weren't watching a bunch of criminal shows with a bunch of the system's going to come save you from your creepy neighbor as the story every single week. Even, you know, very corny shows like the Brady Bunch or of course, All in the Family is more of the comedy, but and later on, the X-Files, which, yeah, they were government agents, but they were exploring mysteries and using their intelligence to solve problems and showing the triumph of human beings and the power that we have, that even when things look like they're common knowledge and they're bad ideas, that we can conquer them. Our amazing inventiveness, sometimes inspired by good story, is testament. In fact, some people even say that the human being is so amazing, they've managed to invent and prosper despite the fact that we're in a money exchange greed system. Not because of. How many scientific inventions have been stopped because they couldn't afford the funding? I know people personally who are scientists that had to give up their dream. One was to invent a car that ran off of compressed air. And he ran out of money. The scientist working on a cure for cancer might make $60,000 a year if he's lucky, if he has tenure, if he finds a job. And the hedge fund manager, who basically does nothing for a living, makes $300 million. Whereby, what I mean, he's not making anything. He's passing along money flow. Something that's based on debt. What's behind our money is not gold, stacks of gold. It's debt created in a bank. The entire thing is an illusion. Now I say, go get as much as you can, but it's an illusion. Money is numbers that exist on a computer base based on loans and debt. That's what it is. That's what we've given so much importance to. Now, it is real only because we believe it is. But in a very real physical sense, it's not even represented anymore by gold. It's represented by when someone else takes a loan The bank then takes a higher interest rate and hopes that everybody doesn't call it in at once. That's what money is in the modern world. It is an illusion that exists on a computer database. We already use it that way. How many times have you swiped your card? I do it. I have a little card, a little prepaid card. It's digital numbers. It's got a little paper backing it up, but it's all projection. It's all projected, illusionary numbers that don't physically exist anywhere, except for when they decide to print a little more or type in the numbers on a computer system somewhere in a bank. So, people would say then, are you proposing no money? Well, in this world, money can also be used for many good things as well. You know, charitable work. And that's the world we live in right now. Money can be used to go to a better school or to, you know, have better, more healthy food. Again, to help out your fellow human beings in some way, shape, or form. And I do believe that if you're one of those folks that finds yourself getting rich, that it's your job to give back to those that are less fortunate. So there's a lot of people that do a lot of good work getting money to people that need it. So no, I don't think money is evil. What I'm saying is scientifically, we may be coming to an age where it's no longer functional for regular people anymore. With the way automation is going, automation will even take the place, robots will take the place of, or computers, of even high-end, very intellectual jobs, including these stock traders we mentioned earlier. This has already been done. There's been a computer stock trader before. It was Goldman Sachs, I think, gave it an experiment and had this computer doing all the deals, doing all the wheels and deals. So this is already upon us. So what do we do with it? Plumbers, electricians, construction workers in the near future, however many years it takes, I don't know, but it's the technology's there. They can build a house and just send it somewhere. They can do it in a factory with robots. Maybe they need a guy to – I've actually worked on prefabbed houses before, so I know this is a reality. I'm an electrician, after all, or haven't done it in a while, but I am. The electrician goes in there for a couple minutes, plugs everything in, tests it out, bam. But he's not going through the physical work of wiring the whole house anymore. I mean, that's where it's headed, and it's already started. It'll even – the projection now is – the one company is talking about they'll make a house in a day. In one day. That's an awful lot of people not working to build that house. So, am I being doom and gloom? No, not necessarily. Because as I talked about before, human beings have a way of triumphing and surviving. Even some of the most tragic things. Will they have to triumph over the idea that money is necessary? And what would that even look like? Well, let's look at a couple proposals. Without us needing to trade, a time would have to come about where resources are gathered and used properly and extremely efficiently. The accessibility would have to be such that it fulfills human needs and desires, not just needs. We can't just view ourselves like rats that just need food or something like that. We're mental, we're physical, we're spiritual. There are certain things that humans desire. If a system doesn't provide that for them, they won't believe in it. So, we can start very simply then. How do we gather the energy to make a future like this? Well, things that already exist. 1 hour of sunlight contains more energy than the world uses in an entire year. That's a fact. 1 hour of sunlight contains more energy than the world uses in an entire year. So, a time to abandon, at least on a large scale, a primitive use of fossil fuels. Wind energy can be harnessed in 3 states. This has been admitted now. I'm not talking conspiracy theory. I don't bring that nonsense to my show. I'm talking fact. In 2007, the U.S. Department of Energy said wind energy can be harvested in three U.S. states and to power all of the other 50 states. And that's what the U.S. Department of Energy has admitted. So wind has come a long way as well. What we're talking about is we'll need power for our new future city beyond money that isn't money-based, that's constantly replaceable. We're talking sunlight, folks, wind, and some other ones. Let's look at some other power. There's one called tidal power. There's also just basic wave power, which is an interesting one. Yes, power from just the flowing waves on the ocean. And it's real. That's another power that would never go away, that we could always use. So there's also, of course, geothermal. This is energy taken from the natural steam and heat without depleting it in any way from the earth. So people would say, okay, what would have to start such a future city beyond money? Well, first of all, humans have desires and needs and wants, and energy is needed to provide a modern life of desires, needs, and wants. So let's look at some other things that would have to sort of come about. I mentioned accessibility. There's another thing that would happen is if that model would work in our future city that we're sort of creating here, in theory, if we make those things work, there might be, as some of the population control people try to scare you with, too many people. So instead of panicking and hoping that people die, basically, what we could do is we would then have to colonize the sea. There are people already working on this. The most famous being Jacques Fresco from the Venus Project. And I encourage people to look up the Venus Project. That's where I'm getting some of this information, not all of it. But inhabiting the sea, underwater cities, the whole thing. This would also have to entail creative farming. So what I'm talking about here is really basic structural stuff here. Basic alternative farming, hydroponics, and other things where you can stack large farms and tall cylindrical buildings, and you don't have to take up lots of land to do it. In fact, you don't need much earth at all to do it. And it's a use of a modern farming technology that's real, that already exists. It's not way out there in the future. So energy, creative farming, all of these things that already exist, that if the people of the world got together and say, hey, this money thing isn't going to work anymore, that they could. And this is happening already, by the way, folks. There are people working on experimental towns of this nature. The most famous I mentioned before, Jacques Fresco, with his Venus Project. So this is being put into reality by extremely expert engineers. In Fresco's case, he's been an architect for 80 years. He's about 94 years old person now. And he's been drawing future cities his whole life. So in our future city, automation. Well, what's going to happen anyway, either in the money system or in our future, for now we'll say a fantasy city, but some people say they can make this happen. Automation has its up and downs, of course, as we all know. It can save us from boring, mundane jobs, allowing us to grow and be more educated, not as exhausted. But in the money model, the money exchange, the medium money medium exchange model that we have now, jobs are vanishing because of automation, even jobs once considered safe from such a thing. But since you will have accessibility and not a need for money, well, you don't have to worry about jobs disappearing. This includes sanitation and everything else being drawn up, and these things are being drawn up right now, folks. This isn't just a thought. They're drawing up entire city sanitation systems with pneumatic tubing and other aspects, of course, to take care and deal with waste, not just throw it somewhere. And so many things, including transportation, would be automated and, of course, more environmentally friendly. So, it's also projected that some people will ask the question, I'm sorry, I was about to jump. Some people would say, okay, what about incentive? Let's just say that this whole thing works. There's this automated city that's both a combination of future and is a combination of also being very environmentally friendly and earthy. What about the incentive? You're going to have a whole bunch of people sitting around all day, not doing anything. Education, as a culture grows and you're around it and you're around it, the enhancement of yourself through education can actually become sort of the new ego. Like right now, the ego is a bit like my car, my house. It's not perfect, but we strive to create a continuously better existence. So an example could be, you might desire to be the smartest person to help out the community. Maybe that's the guy that gets the pretty girl, if you know what I mean, if you're using that, comparing it to the money model. So instead of the one who's the richest guy does and gets this and gets that, your ego might be actually attached to your intelligence and attached to your contribution. So it would be like saying, you know, hey, look what I did. Look what I invented. Because you're not stuck surviving. Remember, being stuck surviving has held back scientists. I know some personally, as I mentioned earlier, that had to give up their dream because it was all about the money. So the drive to create things and do things, well, that's just the force of creation. Sure, you might have occasional folks just laying about if money is not the incentive. But honestly, it's not how the human psyche works. People get bored. People get, okay, what do I do now? And if they have all this opportunity to enhance themselves and to make where they're at better and to get what they want, this is still about getting what people want. Living in this future city I'm talking about is still about getting what you want, but it's about doing it without the money exchange. So I'm not talking about people just getting their basic needs in that gray sort of communist model. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the resource-based economics model where you get not only what you need, but what you desire and what you need to follow your passions. The pieces and the vices together to put together the beautiful music studio you always wanted. I'm not talking about just supplying needs in that gray sort of old school way. I mean, you will excel because you still want to get what you want. And you'll be helping the other people and the other scientists design things to bring humans what they want. That goes for everything. Medical. Some people would say, you know, there's always, anytime you bring up how societies run, there's a healthcare argument. Well, of course, in a resource-based economy is the word that's being used for this sort of a future world without money. Of course, the motivation is you want to heal people and you don't want to be sick and you don't want your grandfather to die. And so people will be, of course, be motivated to work. I don't necessarily buy into the myth that if they don't have money, they won't work, because they're still going to want things. And we're talking about in our future model here, people still desiring things and getting them because they're freed from the burden of paying their rent. They don't have to just pay their bills and survive. And then by that time, they're so exhausted, they just want to walk down to the pub and, you know, have a beer. I'm not criticizing that activity. I still do that many times. But the point is, you're not exhausted by just existing in an environment like our future world that we're discussing here today, which is what people have come to term a resource-based economic system, one based on the intelligent exchange and use and reuse of resources to free people from the burden of having to just live, to just survive. Now, some people are good at that model. Some people are good at the money exchange model. I think some people just have a natural, beautiful skill with money. And I know some very, very nice rich people that they give to charity and they do all kinds of amazing work. So this isn't classism. I don't have anything against someone that has a lot of wealth. And I've known some pretty amazing wealthy people in my lifetime that definitely give back and do their part in multiple ways. What I'm talking about is if we have to evolve past this, which physicists and scientists are saying for humankind, that we may just have to get rid of this idea of money exchange. So now we're creating our future city and going over some of the pros and cons. Okay. I said before, we were talking about automation and job loss that'll happen anyway. The automation is getting to the point where even highly skilled people can lose their job, not just the guy putting a sticker on the back of a car. So could we become maybe too reliant on automation in our future city model? Well, that's one of the big problems of people saying, well, even if this works and we just decide, look, we're just doing this to better ourselves, is there a chance for some of those sci-fi horror kind of things, the robots taking over, or us becoming so unskilled at physical things that they don't have the skill of the original engineer who came up with these things in the first place? I would say as long as the education and drive factor is still there, then they'll always use that as part of their basic education system. So they'll still continue to drive and continue to learn the old school technology as a reminder, or that's what you would hope they would do. So now let's look at, we mentioned, a future society where money's not necessary. Some people have called this the resource-based economy, for a review for those of you who are not around. Let's look at what human beings need. The saying that's being thrown around is a human being is a biopsychosocial organism. Not just providing needs in the way of, oh, here's your food, here's your wheat and your gruel or whatever it is, but really, mentally, spiritually, and providing for their desires. So, resources, basic stuff humans usually need. Shelter, food, energy. We mentioned all three so far. Many different forms of already existing alternative energy sources. Entertainment. Access to any of this at any time might be another point to make. Otherwise, people might not buy into a resource-based economy system. It would have to be able to get what they want or have the ability to get the knowledge to strive to get what they want, which could be part of the push for work and knowledge. Mental, you could even say spiritual stimulation and emotional support. Humans do need each other. So, again, going back to a model like this would not work because I already know what the diehard capitalists would be telling me right now. They're not going to want to work if there's no money involved. And societies shouldn't just promise basic human needs and they start thinking of things like communism and all this. I'm not talking about basic human needs in this model as I'm defending this model today. I'm not saying I'm 100% buying into it. I just think it's a fascinating idea. But defending it right now, being, it's a myth that people don't work just because there's no money involved. This show, for example, is I'm paying to be on the air right now. And I spent all day for many, 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 many days and nights researching topics on my show. It's a passion. Now, at some point, I'd like to be paid for this. But right now, I'm doing this because I love it. I do music because I love it. Do I want to be paid? Yes. That's the model we live in. I would love to be a professional musician. So just because people aren't using money, I think it's a myth. And, of course, the other thing, they're saying, oh, this hippie world you're trying to create here is only going to, you know, kind of like communism, just supply the basic, you know, food lines and everything else. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about innovative, scientific ways of using resources to where everybody has not only their wants, but their needs. And, of course, instant access is very important, or people won't believe in the model. Or, as I said, instant access, at least to the knowledge to maybe eventually gain something, would be important. So, distribution would be another issue. How would they distribute things? Well, the main thing would be, when at all possible, in our future city, localize. Get as much as you can locally. But we all know that not everything that's needed is always in the same environment. So when necessary and when it's logical, have things, you know, brought in from further away locations. And the magnetic trains people are working on in the future, speaking of transportation, I'm getting back on that one a little bit. The magnetic trains for transporting these goods that we're talking about for distribution are now going super fast. These trains that they have now, the ones in Japan now that go like whatever it is, like 400 miles an hour, they're actually outdated. I mean, they're still used. I don't mean outdated in that way, but these trains are much slower than what's being invented right now. So, the ones that are invented now could go, you could have lunch in New York or something like that and then come back to Los Angeles. They're extremely fast and extremely efficient and operate on much, much less use energy. So one of the proposals of this is to not use airplanes anymore because of how much fuel they use, but actually a much faster underground trainway system using magnets. This technology already exists. Again, back to needs and wants, 3D printing. If anybody's out there heard of the 3D printers, these are printers that print physical objects. They exist. They've been around for about 30 years in their slightly more primitive forms. And as I mentioned before, this model of printing and molding is projected to be making a house in one day. If we are automated with the technology fully, just as it is right now, 75% of the people in the globe could lose their jobs. This is why people are starting to say, maybe we should think of a future society that doesn't use money, just like in Star Trek, The Next Generation. Right now, the service sector in the common model, I'm bringing us back to right here, where we are now. The service sector makes up about 80% of the United States workforce. That means waitresses, service techs of different kinds, people that work, you know, at a store or something like that. Even those jobs are now becoming threatened. How many times? Again, this is technology that already exists. They're just not applying it as much as they could at first. You already have self-checkouts. There are entire self-running stores. But we've all been to the store where there's a self-checkout. There's a whole bunch of them in almost every grocery store I can think of in town, with the exception of Trader Joe's. So, if you consider how many of our jobs are being replaced, and consider that our debt is actually something fake and the money that it supports is just numbers on a computer system, why are we so in love with it still anyway? Can't we let go of this grip of money? Do we want decisions made? You know, stock traders even being replaced by a computer. It's not real. It's fiction. So here's the model that's going to be working for the idea of money in the future. Computers trading fake money based on debt. That's not even a free market. I don't even know what the hell that is. It's technical destruction of our life in an arcane, unscientific model that hopefully our future will not reflect the values of a stock trading robot, which, yes, does exist. So even the people who are sharply disagreeing with me of a future without money, their jobs will be replaced by robots too. Yes, the hedge fund manager making $300 million a year. So people might say, is there no hope? I say there's lots of hope. I made the example before, one of my favorite shows, Star Trek The Next Generation, that fiction and fantasy and science fiction and myth of days past have always been a guiding light showing us inspiration for what humans are capable of. And then we meet up to it and we come up with these inventions. Remember the communicator in the old Star Trek? Well, now we have cell phones and cordless wireless phones. Those communicators that looked like a crazy device of the future in the 60s now look old and ancient to us. So humans are capable of many great things if we just believe in ourselves and our ability to pull things together. And we have at certain times done some pretty amazing things, gotten rid of some old bad habits. There's a, for those of you just joining us, people, I know people that would argue with my idea of a future without money might make the argument, again, I'm rehashing for those that just joined us, laziness without money. So one person, I talked to a lot of people about this to get all their input. One person mentioned crime. I'm like, well, why would they need crime even if there's nothing to steal for? If things are provided either by your work in the city or by just for it being there, what would be the reason for crime? One person told me, well, there'll be a bunch of people sitting around being lazy and they'll commit crimes. It's a very strange and paranoid view, considering most crime comes from a form of money exchange. Almost all crime, except for domestic crime, is based on some kind of money exchange somewhere, whether it's white collar, whether it's blue collar, whether it's gangsters in the street trading for drugs. All crime has money attached to it, with the exception of some domestic crimes, which are crimes of passion and emotion. Again, oftentimes because the people were abused, so they're acting out an abuse often based on the stress of trying to survive and make money. You see how this becomes one big circle if you let it. And again, to state for the record, for those listening, especially if you've just joined us, I don't hate money, and I have nothing against rich people. I'm just making a scientific argument of, can human beings evolve past money? For those of us now listening, I hope you all make lots of money and are very abundant. So, this competition for money, this competition for resources, let's take a look at it again, has also created other things. I said, it's that creates the crime. It's also created other things that, in my opinion, are an illusion. Let's look at arguments about race, for example. Race is a societal construct. It's something pretty much made up by people. Here's what I mean by that. Scientists say that we're made up of about 99.99999% of the same exact genetic material, maybe 100%, with a few subtle variations. We're not a different group of races. We're the same race with a straightness or curliness of hair, or maybe circular or slightly more slanted eyes. It's not a different groups of different types of beings inhabiting the planet. We're all the same biopsychosocial organisms made up of just about 100% of the exact same genetic material. So how does that tie into money? Well, what I'm saying is that a lot of times these social strifes, what are they usually about? Money or a resource? In Africa, sometimes it's water. People are fighting over water supply. Is the fighting model our most efficient model? Nor do we secure resources and distribute them intelligently by reusing things properly and developing a system of excess abundance. And by excess, I don't mean necessarily too much. But sometimes when you make this model of the beyond money model or the resource-based economy model, people still get this idea in their head that you're just providing for basic needs. We are saying in this argument that not just basic needs be provided for, but your wants, your desires, all the things to fulfill your passions, to be available to you and to be quickly accessible. That can be done better with the absence, as I said before, with the scientist. I knew a scientist who basically had to stop doing what he was doing. He was inventing a car that ran off of compressed air because he ran out of money. So we should work together. We should complement each other because the competition is the stifling part. So when you pretend that there's not enough resources and then you compete for them, that's when the wars over water or money or what some people think is religion. Wars aren't based on religion. Wars are based on resources. They're based on land. They're based on gold, water, whatever the resource is. They got coal. They got whatever they need. Oil, of course. So, since we are all the same type of being, and we're all motivated by the same things, why not just engage in a futuristic scientific system that allows people to have these things in a way where they can continue to have them, rather than fighting for them? They can become the brilliant scientists of the future who find creative ways to use and reuse things. Because the model right now, a child in the world dies every 5 seconds from starvation. Is that efficient? When the truth is, there's enough food to feed everybody, that's not efficient. It's the opposite of efficient. So I'm going to take a brief break here and come right back and wrap this up a little bit. And thank you all for tuning in.
Mother, heal me. Please release me from all things worldly that do not serve me. Mother, love me. Mother, help me. Mother, heal me. All things worldly that do not serve me. Mother, love me.
When
Mother,
in these tones
me.
I feel
Mother,
the
our future city in a world beyond money, something that some people are referring to as the resource-based economy. It is a real movement. One of the most famous proponents of it is Jacques Fresco, if I said his name right, and he's started a thing called the Venus Project. He's an architect who has the cities of the future sort of designed and engineered. It's a pretty interesting thing to watch. If you go on YouTube, there's Venus Project stuff all over the place. So we're talking about the efficiency of the money exchange model for humans as a whole versus the potential efficiency of the non-money exchange model. Now, people have lived like this in the past, but not in the big civilizations, in slightly more tribal ways. Another good example of people that kind of work to do everything together is the Amish here in America, the Amish and the Mennonites. The difference between, say, Amish and the model I'm proposing is that ours is highly technological and highly scientific. Isn't it funny how a group of people can for so long live in an environment where they believe in absolutely no violence whatsoever? The Amish do not believe in raising their hand to hit another person. There's almost no recorded incidents of Amish being in a fight. But in fact, for a while, the Amish didn't sign up for war. And some of the Americans went, "You're not patriotic." And would, you know, look down upon them riding down the street in their horse and buggy. And they still do. If you've ever been to Pennsylvania and seen that, I used to live not too far away. I used to buy fruit from Amish all the time. They do use, or Mennonites do, they use money. The Amish do to some degree now. They have to pay property taxes and stuff. So they have little work projects they do and things they do for money. So they're surviving in the modern world. It's actually just a pretty amazing story by itself. So what can we do to have a society that's not violent? It's a good example to look at these little societies. Well, they've grown up in an environment where violence is just plain not existent. It doesn't exist. They're not violent towards each other. It's not genetic. Some people argue genetics. It's not genetics. Genetics are a predisposition to how you may react to an environment. That is your genetic predisposition. How you form as a human being, you are not finished when you come out of the womb. Your environment means everything. We start raising people in a way that's away from the greed, away from the violence, and where everybody's provided for and is allowed to have the things they desire, want, lust for, and their passions, as well as just the food and the basic stuff and the energy that's all in the air and in the sun. We can recondition the human race. In fact, it's done every day. Children are not born genetically bad. They are products of their environment. If you're going to look at a baby and tell me that that human being is finished being developed, then I don't know what you're looking at. Of course, it's not finished being developed. There may be some genetic predispositions that determine how they react to the environment. If the environment's violent, they will have a way to react to it. If it's nonviolent, they will act accordingly. This is the truth of genetic science that a lot of people overlook, but we kind of don't have time to get into that. I'm saying that these things are possible and that a future without money is possible. But humans have to start reconditioning how they think and why they've given something that is based on a mountain of debt with numbers that don't actually exist anywhere but in a computer system anyway, with money that's not backed up by gold, and why they've said that this is so important that we'll let 5 children every second in the world die of starvation, even though there's plenty of food to feed them. So the every man for himself model, though interesting and has produced some interesting results, is maybe not the best one for all of humankind. Soon, human beings, not just me saying this, physicists and other scientists and social scientists saying soon human beings will not be able, common people will not be able to labor for money. If we use this reality to embrace a world without money, greed, police, jails, we can conquer starvation with science rather than saying, oops, you didn't make enough money, sorry. We can embrace our actual growth potential by not being burdened by survival, by the money exchange survival. And we can do this. Let this time in history be seen as a time when there's a triumph of the human spirit to get past this thing, just like we've gotten past some other ugly things, like slavery as an example. Things that we thought were natural. People used to argue that slavery is natural, natural state of being. They say the same thing about money. Only to a small degree, a basic, honest barter is natural. And slavery surely is not a natural state of being. And neither is having to be dependent on a money medium exchange that cannot continue to provide for us anyway. That's the trick of this whole argument. Let's be remembered in history as the people that started to think outside the box and say, okay, what can we do beyond this? Look to the present technology that we already have that can bring this about. For all of us, bio, psycho, social organisms, human beings. Let's take a journey to the undiscovered country. Seven stars to the left and onward till morning. Or as Captain Picard would say, make it so, number one. Thank you. And remember that the mysteries and possibilities of the universe are closer to Main Street than you may have possibly imagined. Have a great evening.